And right this moment, I have a CBS Sports Golf Analyst, a 15-time winner as a professional, top 10 finishes in all four majors, a three-time member of the President's Cup team. Frank Nabilo is my guest. Frank, it is so good to have you back. How are you?
Great, thanks, Jim. Long time no speak. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. Frank, thanks so much. Great to have you back. So if we were to go back to the start of play yesterday, Frank, and consider that Mito Pereira had a three-shot lead and that the guys who were closest to him were not big names, what kind of expectations did you have for him going into Sunday?
To be honest, Jim, we're a little deflated because, you know, unless you're really inside golf, the leaderboard didn't exactly look that compelling. So we were hoping for guys like McIlroy to at least add some flavor to it, get off to a good start, which he did. And, you know, there was an outside chance too, Justin Thomas, but he was seven back and the record for a comeback was seven. So it's one of those ones where, you know, when you get ready to do it, you literally follow the ball. And I was really impressed with Mito Pereira. You know, when we try to look through in his bio, I've watched him a little bit over the last 12 months. But, you know, this is a kid that was apparently when he was 14 or 15 was, you know, a lot of people thought he was going to be really good. And he quit golf for 2 years. So, you know, there's always that question mark. But, you know, I look back, Jim, if he had about a 15-footer on 17 that hung on the front edge. If that goes in, he had about 1,000 different ways to play the 18th hole. But, you know, ifs and buts, that's the beauty of this game.
Frank Nabilo is joining us. You know, Frank, I was going to get to that point, but since you got me into it, let me follow you right there. Like, how different is the conversation that you and I are having right now if he gets that one more roll from that putt on 17 and goes to 18 with that two-shot lead?
It's totally different. I mean, you're looking at a different career. I remember Jeff Sluman I played against and all that. He won the PGA Championship. That was his first win. I think it was 1988. But even that, people think, oh, you know, that you sort of put the word fluke in there. And then just going through doing the homework, you know, people forget he shot 65 on Sunday to beat a really good field, actually. And then the next one that was in the same category, believe it or not, is John Daly in 1991. So it happens very rarely. And they both had really good careers. So with Mito Pereira, and I'm glad we had Neiman. Neiman actually joined the broadcast when Mito was just about to start the back nine through 10 and 11. So he presented a lot of insight. They have the same instructor, Eduardo McKeel, and that, and they even swing a little alike. And he has said, hey, Mito's MO is he's fearless. And right up till about 30 minutes to go, that's exactly what he looked like. Totally different story.
Frank, I was going to say, now that you've had some time to think about it and reflect upon it, how would you sum up what happened to him on the 18th hole?
I think the realization, you go back to 17, you've got to sort of go back to Saturday because the hole played almost identical to what it did on Saturday, and he laid up on Saturday. And I actually mentioned that to Ian Baker Finch, who's also on the broadcast. You know, he's like, he made a decision yesterday to lay up. Today, what's he going to do? And I think he stood on that tee and was like, you know, I've got one chance to win this, and that's knock it on the green. He had a really good shot, was unlucky, it rolled down the hill. And I thought up until then he was totally fine, but once the putt stopped short, and he, you know, 18 is the hardest hole on the golf course. And I think it really helped Justin Thomas because Thomas thought he was at least two back, so he played the hole very aggressively. Now, Mito all of a sudden stands on that tee and knows he's got four to win. And you're playing the hardest hole on the golf course. There's one place you can't hit, which is right. And in any sport, whenever you say don't, your brain registered what the don't is. And I'm sure in his head was don't go right, and that's exactly where it went. Game, set, and match.
Frank Nabilo joining us. You know, Frank, so Justin Thomas shoots 74 on Saturday, seven shots back to start the day, one over yesterday after shanking that drive on six. So when did you first start thinking that he might have a shot to win it?
To be honest, on 17. I know we talked about him a little earlier, but you're right. You know, he was lucky. Actually, the sixth hole was pivotal for everybody. Cameron Young also playing, you know, a rookie, looking like he had a really good chance. He made an unbelievable three on that. Will Zalatoris, who also made the playoff, hit it unplayable over the greens, dropped it on the cart path, made an incredible up and down for a bogey. And it just looked like if any one of those guys were to go on and win, the sixth hole was really important. But, you know, to answer your question, follow through, you know, I legitimately didn't think that Thomas had a chance until 17. And then he still needed help, and that's exactly how it panned out. But, you know, he now has a Hall of Fame career, 15 wins, two PGA championships and a player. So it changed his life for the rest of his career. He's a star now.
You beat me to it, Frank. I was going to say, does a second major and winning it the way he did with a tremendous comeback, does that move him into a different class now going forward? And I guess so, right?
Yeah, totally. Because, you know, number one, a double major winner. I just referenced that seven shots. So he ties a record. You throw in the Players' Championship, 15 wins. People have gone into the Hall of Fame for far less. I know his career is far from finished when, you know, he's barely, not even 30. So, you know, you're looking at a guy, though, that now in this sort of almost a post-Tiger Woods, at least he's still playing, but you're looking in this era where, you know, who's going to be the guy that's going to clock up five, six, maybe seven major championships? So he becomes in that conversation.
You know, Frank, you mentioned Tiger, so let me ask you about him. He battled on Friday to make the cut, and then he appeared to be in really serious pain on Saturday before he withdrew. Before we get into the decision to withdraw, what did you make of what you saw from him and his game at Southern Hills?
Number one, I'm glad he played because he brings an energy to the event. And you know, he actually played alongside Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy the first 2 days. They were on the good side of the draw too, which actually is another thing, just to go slightly back to Justin Thomas. He felt like he had been stung after two rounds. He was six under. He led that morning wave and then the wind dropped. So Woods, McIlroy, going back to that, they're on the right side of the draw. So when Tiger started off, I mean, on his very first hole, the 10th hole, he hits it into 3 feet, birdies his first hole. We haven't seen him since Augusta. It's like it's game on again. He just has that ability to raise the level of his own game and the championship. I thought it would hurt Spieth and McIlroy, but McIlroy played flawlessly on that first day. But the second day in good conditions, I mean, Woods was, I mean, he was done to rights. It looked like he was going to miss the cut. And then 16, I know it's a hole I cover, but, you know, it was vintage Woods. He hit a good drive, but the long iron he hit, he hit the closest second shot into this 527-yard par four out of anyone in the field that day. Birdies that, makes the cut. Conditions then changed again on Saturday. And I know you're going to ask me, but I don't fault him pulling out. I really don't. I mean, it was cold, wet, and miserable. And he did not look like he was walking. He looked like he was walking gingerly, to be honest.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Not only would I not fault him for it, part of me wonders why he tries to play through it, given the pain he's in. But I think you make a pretty good argument. Frank, like, he says he fully intends to play at St. Andrews in July. Based on what you've seen from him this year and how that course sets up, what kind of expectations would you have for him there?
Well, St. Andrews is a good venue for him. Not only did he win in 2000, but people are going to say it's Lynx Golf, but it's relatively flat. I know you've got to walk up and down a little bit. I know there's a U.S. Open at Brookline before that. I wouldn't be surprised if he has a little visit to Brookline, but if it's a true U.S. Open setup with thick rough, then I think it's a no-show because, you know, he's made of glass now. He really is. So if he has a swipe at a sort of 5-6 inch rough, I mean, he could snap, you know, all pun intended. But so I think it would be wiser if it's a really tough setup for the U.S. Open that he skips it and gets ready for a golf course that not only has he won at, but actually would play to him. There's a little bit of bounce. It's a very strategic golf course, and he just has good feeling. And it's 150th. So, I mean, there's just too many things that say he's going to be there.
Frank, one last thought about Tiger. I mean, you've been around the game a long, long time. For people who just started following golf when Tiger was dominating and maybe now are looking or waiting for the next Tiger Woods, I mean, how impossible is that? Is it safe to say that we're not going to see somebody dominate the tour in the way that he did for as long as he did and that folks just kind of need to let that go once and for all?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jim. The only way we're going to get another dominant player is the equipment, in my opinion, has to stabilize first. Because if I go back, you know, I played in the 80s and then the 90s. I remember first playing with Woods when he came out. And we thought the days of a Jack Nicklaus were sort of over. But if you look, once the middle wood came and he came out of that new generation that had a metal driver, everybody went to the solid ball. And you sort of had 5 to 10 years of everybody doing roughly the same things with the same equipment. So if you take a snapshot of that, he was so dominant. We would say Steve Elkington a lot. We would say in the locker room, it's a joke. There'd always be a discussion every day on what Tiger Woods did on one hole. It'd be a par five and say you hit a 2-iron and someone would say, Woods hit an 8-iron in there. You go, no, that's not possible. He would do a freakish thing every single day. And, I mean, he was winning majors, not by one or two, but when he won that U.S. Open at Pebble Beach by 15, you know what? It's nearly spotting the field. Best players in the world by four shots a day. That's like winning a, I know the Roland Garros is on. That's like winning six love, six love, six love every single day. So, yeah, for the people that didn't see him in the early 2000s, it's the greatest golf I've ever been around, played alongside, and even as an announcer, watched. Incredible. So to answer your question, equipment has to just standardize for a little while so that you have a generation playing with exactly the same stuff, no one getting an advantage. And then hopefully we get another freakishly good player out of that.
Frank, I love that analogy. It's like being at Roland Garros and winning love, love, and love. Frank, you mentioned Elk. Elk is great. Elk's a very, very good friend, and you're laughing already. But Elk's a very good friend. And with Elk, I have to always remind him, know your room. Elk, if I put you on the Daily Show, there's certain things you cannot say that you can say if I put you on the pod or if you and I are hanging out. There's so many Elk stories. Do you have a favorite Elk story that you can tell on this show?
That I can tell on this show. So what's the rating on this show right now, Joe?
Well, we are midday. You know, you're part of the CBS family, Frank. You know this. Yeah. We are a midday show. Broad daylight.
No, exactly. No, Elk was a teammate of mine. We played in three President's Cups together. He was a tremendous teammate. But I also played against him a couple of times in the match play, certainly match play. But I hated playing with him. He had the best backswing in golf. If you want to look at golf swings, go and look at Elk's. But Elk, you know... I really can't tell a proper Elk story on this thing, but
I know.
I mean, it's funny as hell, but yeah, he was, as a teammate, it was great because he just wanted to beat everybody he played, but Elk's Elk. I remember I first met him when I think we were late teenagers, and I knew he was good then, and you know what a resume too. Speaking of a PGA Championship, he won in '95, won Players Championships. People still don't realize how good he was, but as a swinger of the club, I had a pretty good golf swing, but. I was jealous of Elk's swing. I really was. And he knew everybody was, too. And he would rub it in your nose. So, in a good way. But, yeah, great teammate.
Frank, that's why I asked you to tell a story, because deep down I knew you could not tell a story. But you can't. And you, by the way, you had a great swing. You can speak to this really quickly on the way out the door. How beautiful was Elk's swing?
I've actually got his golf book. He knows that. So, look, you can thumb through the pages. So, you can, you know, do like those old cinema stuff and see a swing. So people talk about Sam Snead. I'm a great Tom Weisskopf fan. Hopefully his health improves. But Elk's backswing, you know, I'll go on record. I think it's the best backswing ever in golf. Follow through, maybe you can pick a hole in it. I don't know. That's even being nitty-poo. But the way he set the club, the way he stood up to it. And like I said, I hated playing with him because, you know, Woods was freakishly good in a different way. But Elk made it look easy, and I hated it when you were playing a game and somebody else made it look easy. It was hard to play alongside.
I get it. He is a CBS Sports Golf analyst. He is a 15-time winner as a professional, top 10 finishes in all four majors, and a three-time member of the President's Cup team. Frank, so great to get caught up. I really appreciate you and your thoughts. That was an absolute blast. Great to have you back, Frank.
Thanks, Jim, as always. Take care.
You too. Frank Nabilo joining us. Expertly done. I mean, I loved everything about that conversation, but especially the part where he's like, no, I really cannot give you my best Elk story or any Elk story at all. Because Elk is a wild man. Was that great? What he said, he goes, yeah, but best backswing ever. And he loved to rub your face in it. Nobody like Elk.